Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Uncommon Ground with Van Jones ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Wake up, America! Wake up!
The political division in the country undeniably deep right now.
The big question on a lot of people's minds, can Americans come together and heal?
I'm Van Jones, and this is Uncommon Ground.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move, or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
If you're constantly on the hunt for a good deal, then you need Rakuten. Rakuten is the smartest way to save money when you shop because members get cash back at over 3,500 stores across every category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, traveling, dining, and more. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while you're doing it? It's a no-brainer. Get the Rakuten app now and join the 17 million members who are already saving. Cashback rates change daily. See Rakuten.com for details. That's Rakuten. Your cash back really adds up.
Welcome back to Uncommon Ground. This is a show where we are exploring what it takes to make meaningful change in a country as divided as our country has become. You know, one thing I try to do on this show is to bring you inspirational examples, you know, example of people who've been courageous, example of people who maybe have taken on some stuff that you might be thinking about taking on, but you don't know how to do it. You know, we all need examples like that. So I think a lot of us are feeling stuck. We want to do more. We want to give more. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons to hold back and play safe. Today, we're going to talk to somebody who decided not to hold back, who decided not to play safe, who made huge changes in his life and is better off for it.
I really do believe we need people to change. You know, we need the transformation of the individual. And so that's really what I've leaned into now is like, okay, let me stop soapboxing and telling everyone else what to do. And let me start looking at myself. Like, and it's this whole part of the whole journey.
I am talking about Adrien Grenier. Now, many of you may know Adrien as an actor. He obviously played Vincent Chase on HBO's Entourage. He played Anne Hathaway's unsupportive boyfriend in Devil Wears Prada. And he was in a 2021 Netflix miniseries called Clickbait. But he's a lot more than an actor. And in recent years, you know, Adrien's really given up the whole Hollywood spotlight and rat race to focus on something he believes in a lot more than his own personal fame and fortune, which is the planet. Now, when it comes to nature conservation and ecology, you know, Adrien is one of the big, big voices now in the world. He's a UN Environment Goodwill Ambassador. In 2017, he helped the UN Environment Program launch Clean Seas, which is a campaign to end marine plastic pollution. He also co-founded the Lonely Whale Foundation, which aims to inspire empathy toward marine species, you know, dolphins and whales and stuff like that. I actually met him through his foundation's Stop Sucking campaign, which is working to get rid of single-use plastic straws. And he invests in green companies through his impact investment company. It's called DuContra Ventures. And recently he launched Earth Speed, which is a docu-series on how you can make wiser investments of your time and your money to really help the planet. So he does a lot of good in the environmental space. And that's why I wanted to talk with him. You know, we got deep real fast in this thing. And we wound up talking at a completely different level, not just about how he, in the external way, moved from talking about being a celebrity and that sort of stuff to being, you know, more impactful. We talked about his own personal life. We talked about his inner journey. We talked about how he went from speaking for causes to really embodying causes. And this is one of the more powerful experiences I've had as an interviewer, because I just didn't expect it to get so deep so quickly. And I didn't expect him to be so honest and so transparent and so vulnerable. You know, we got so deep. I feel like I need to warn you, if you're sensitive to issues of childhood trauma or sexual abuse, we do talk about that stuff around the 15-minute mark. I just want you to be aware of that and let this serve as a warning. This is not just a conversation about dolphins. You know, dolphins go deep. We went way deeper. And I think that this may be a conversation that will help you imagine a pathway for your own self to let go of some of the pretense and some of the, you know, pomp and circumstance and phoniness that all of us have, you know, in our lives, and face some of the challenges inside and let that move you into maybe a completely different way of being, which is what has happened with Adrian. It's really, really amazing. He's an amazing human being. I think it's just an extraordinary conversation. Stay tuned for my conversation with Adrian Grenier after this break. Hey, brother, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I appreciate you, and I appreciate all that you have done and are doing, you know, to make the world a better place. You know, I think, you know, for a lot of people, they think about you as the guy from Entourage. They think about you as the guy from Devil Wears Prada. You know, they see you as an actor. I see you as a change maker. I see you as somebody who's actually taken the fame and used it for a deeper purpose. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to just talk with you is, you know, you're doing so much work now, everything from the UN, everything from the private sector, the public education on oceans, taking on such a big cause. And I just wanted to talk with you about what that journey has been like, what you're up to, and what people who are a part of my listening audience might gain from you in terms of just inspiration. What made you push away from the stars and embrace the ocean?
Oh, man. The long journey from cities and concrete to Hollywood and to water, and then now in the ground, in the dirt. Obviously, I'm now old enough to say that I've had a long journey.
You mentioned about being in the earth and being in the dirt. Talk a little bit about what you're doing right now when it comes to that.
Yeah, so I've actually been on probably a four-year transformational experience where I have, and COVID really helped sort of propel me in this direction, but I now live in Texas. In Texas, on a 46-acre ranch. I just went with a hitch and picked up a donkey yesterday. I can see him right now out the window with our two llamas and our dogs and that whole thing. So we're basically doing a homesteading thing out here. And I, you know, I had a lot of a series of rock bottoms, I guess. Mm-hmm. I sort of skidded the ground, and I finally landed flat on my face, and I realized I had to make a bunch of changes. And those changes led me here. And, you know, everyone has their own rock bottom, whether it be drugs and alcohol or women or whatever. But for me, it was pretty much all of it. And I realized I needed to make a big change because I was oriented in such a way that I saw myself in 20, 30 years, and I did not like what I foresaw. And so I realized that I had to really change everything and do some serious soul searching, which means I had to shed a lot of bad habits, a lot of patterns, a lot of misconceptions, a lot of delusions, and rewrite my story.
I don't think we should move too far from that, because I think you're speaking to a lot of people. I mean, especially with, you know, COVID, with all the different changes, I think a lot of people are needing to reset and reboot. So you're ahead of the curve in that. When you say you hit rock bottom or skidded rock bottom a couple of times, what are you talking about?
I mean, I was literally living the best life. I had access, I had money, I had fame, I was traveling the world. You know, on paper, according to our consumer ideology here in the States, I had achieved royalty. I was royalty of the American dream.
Right.
It's like, sure. Yay.
True story.
Yeah. And so in my mind, I was like, okay, I can do no wrong. Everything is perfect. But really, I was missing something so, so deep and important. And it wasn't until my girlfriend at the time, you know, basically hit me with a big karmic wallop. She just smacked me upside the head spiritually. And she said, I'm out. And I said, what are you talking about? What do you mean you're out? I'm the best. Like you have everything with me. And she said, no, actually you're the worst. I was so incredulous. It was such a shock to my system that it was almost like a glitch in the matrix. It shook. It was sort of a pattern disruption. I was like, what? Like, what do you mean? That doesn't make any sense that you would leave me. And because she left, it gave me just enough room. It allowed me to squint my eyes open just enough to realize that I've been asleep for 30 years. I've just been in this pattern, this consumption and accumulation and indulgence and more and more and more. And can I get the next job and make more money and then buy the next, and then become a mini mogul in real estate. And then I'm going to get into music now and I'm going to change the world. And by the way, we're talking about changing the world, right? I mean, I really believe like, oh, not only do I have the money and the power and the influence, you an ambassador, amazing, but I also care enough to do something about the world. I have a heart big enough to actually do something as opposed to everyone else who's just out for themselves.
So you get this whole veneer of kind of righteousness on top of all that, that makes it even harder to self-reflect.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 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 And I really believed that I and I alone were going to like, you know, was going to do amazing things. And it was all in good intentions, right? But I realized, you know, there's that quote, you know, first I was a smart ass and then I tried to change the world and then I got wise and I tried to change myself. I realized that in the same breath that I was trying to make these positive changes for the world externally, I was at the same time living and embodying the opposite. So I was almost driving with the brake on.
When did that breakup happen?
5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago.
That was the first big speed bump you hit when you're like, hold on a second, I'm missing something.
Yeah, I mean, things were great. I mean, as far as I understood. But there was something, something gnawing, something nagging inside of me. I was like, the other shoe is going to drop or something. I didn't know what it was going to be. Is there going to be a death? Is it going to be something tragic? I promised her, I said, you know what? I love you and I trust you enough that I'm going to, in earnest, I'm going to look at myself in a real way. And it took me about 2 years to peel back all of the layers, to shed all of the patterns that I'd built up to protect myself.
What did you do? How did you do that? Like therapy or like mushrooms? I mean, how do you do all that? That's hard.
Yeah, all of the above. I mean, first and foremost, I had to Marie Kondo everything. I just said start shedding all the material things, all of the indulgences, all the you know. I went celibate, so I cut out sex, I cut out booze. I really just had to clear my nervous system so that I could start to become more aware of what was underneath, because I realized that all of those things were numbing me. They were escapes. So I would literally plot throughout the day different opportunities to escape, to leave myself, to leave my body, to numb out on some endorphin or some high or some indulgence or some distraction.
You know, people feel I can't make a difference because I don't have enough money, I don't have enough fame, I don't have enough this, I don't have enough that. And so whether it's for selfish reasons or quote unquote selfless reasons, everybody starts trying to get in the position where you were. Everybody's trying to get famous. Everybody's trying to get rich. Everybody's trying to become an influencer. That's a new term, influencer. But it's basically the same quest for like money, fame, stuff. But you call it an influencer. So then it's like, all right. And then when you get there, obviously there's a lot of good that comes with it, but it doesn't solve all the problems. In fact, it can make some of the problems internally more profound. You know, these problems just get bigger and bigger. It's not like, you know, you can get enough fame to fix it all by yourself. And so there's a trap I think a lot of people are caught in and don't know it. You won and realize that in the winning, you'd actually lost a lot.
Yeah, well, I let go. You know, I had to let go of a lot, you know, and I had to, you know, they call it an ego death, right? Mm. The thing you
Nobody
think you
wants
are.
That.
No, it hurts. It hurts.
Nobody wants that.
Oh, man, please. Ouch. Like, ooh. You know, when you're avoiding it, it just, you just delay the suffering, you know. But once you just let go and go through it, it sucks. It's painful. And I did do a number of spiritual practices, which were hard and grueling at times and felt, oh, because it, what it does is it increases sensation. I re-entered my body for the first time in 30 years, literally. I had feelings in my body that I had let go of. And I mean, we don't have to go into the, you know, gory details, but, you know, I had some trauma as a kid, as we all do, right? And we create mechanisms to protect our emotional being from those traumas. And God bless us that we can do that. But I had, at a very young age, decided I didn't want to feel a certain way. So I allowed myself to just lift off and be just outside my body so I didn't have to feel. And when I came back and re-entered my physical body and I started, and this isn't esoteric, this is just suddenly I was bringing awareness to the parts of my body that I was not paying attention to. And I started to feel those traumas come up because we store traumas in our body, in our muscles, in our gut, in our physical space. And I started to feel stuff that I didn't want to feel. And that's when I had the opportunity, I should say, to take a look at all of that and then begin to heal those parts that I was running from, really.
You know, you mentioned not wanting to get into the gory details, but, you know, I think for my podcast audience, like, there's really nothing off limits. And if there's anything about that that you feel comfortable sharing, it might help somebody else just know what they can recover from.
Yeah, well, I'd love to share. So I didn't grow up with my father. So much of my story is a story of Papa, you know, trying to come back to Papa, find Papa. Later in life, I realized that I am Papa, like I get to be Papa, right? Hopefully have children too, but I get to, you know, embody that father energy. But not growing up with a father, not having any positive male role models, you know, I really lacked a lot. And I think that's a common story. And so, you know, at a young age, my mom was looking for men to fulfill that role. And often those men were either destructive in some way, absent, or just immature, right? Not even actively teaching me how to womanize or how to sneak or how to, you know, do toxic things, but also just to be not present, you know, how to escape responsibility or skirt presence. And then there's some men that were actively destructive. One man in particular was a gentleman, say that lightly. He was working for the Big Brother, Big Sister program. So he became my big brother. And it turns out that he had an interest in young boys in a sexual way. I can't say that I know exactly what happened to me at that young age. All I know is that I really didn't like it. It made me extremely uncomfortable. And it was at that moment that I did not want to feel anymore. I did not want to experience, totally dissociated. And so the combination of leaving my body, leaving the feeling part, and also learning these toxic behaviors from other male role models, I just ended up growing into a man that was immature and disrespectful. And I recognized those patterns through a lot of work. I worked with one woman, Alana Mehta in particular, and she was extremely helpful to me. And through many months of abstinence, and she was my accountability coach so that I could really start to stay in it, stay in my body and not always skirt out finding indulgences. And so she was holding me accountable to that work. And then one day we did a session in which she, God bless her, I mean, she intuitively somehow was able to guide me through meditation back into that experience as a young boy. And I realized, I said, oh, fuck, this is the work. This is where I get to rewrite my story. This is where I get to stand up for myself now for the first time. And because that was the moment that I re-entered my body, that was the moment that I came back into the feeling. And from then on, now having connection into my body and feelings that I hadn't had before, I could reconnect with my intuition. So now I could start looking out in the world and recognizing all of the bad decisions that I was making that I wasn't connected to, that I wasn't feeling, that I wasn't responsive to because I was numb. So then I would go out in the world and I'd try and live my life as I used to. And I'd be like, oh, this doesn't feel right. I should probably not do this. So that there was like a responsiveness, like an immediacy to the way I was navigating the world after that. And I realized I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to become, you know, my abuser. I want to be the father. I want to be the man that I wished that I had had as a young boy. So suddenly, I'm oriented now towards becoming a higher order of being than what I was settling for. And that's when the work began. I was like, okay, now how do I be that?
Man, look, it's so powerful to hear you talking about what you're talking about, because men don't talk about this stuff. And it also, I mean, maybe it can help people aim for the right thing. Because I do think that some of the quest for fame and glory and money and all these different things, it is trying to compensate for something. And not just in society or in the community, but just even in oneself, a sense of less than, not enough, whatever those feelings are. It's like, well, I'll show them if I can just get this, if I can just get that. And to your point, it doesn't work. And you can spend decades climbing up the wrong ladder, chasing the wrong car. And eventually you have to come back to this route that you're talking about.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You know, you mentioned this term around healing and how healing does and doesn't happen and the long process of it. I think that's true for individuals. It's also true for societies. It's true for oceans. It's true for planets. You know, one of the big things that I think from the external place, what we saw is just, I didn't know what was going on internally, but I saw externally, you definitely began to shift what was important to you. And it became, you know, maybe you'd always had the sort of instinct for service and for, you know, being a change maker, but it seemed that that got, you know, dialed up more and the pursuit of fame got dialed down more. Can you talk about how you navigate that? Because, you know, it's not just you. You build up a whole world of friends and associates and agents and managers and lawyers and accountants. And there's a whole, you know, you're Tony Stark in the Iron Man suit when you're famous, you know, and that Iron Man suit has to be fed and they want commissions and all that kind of stuff. How do you navigate that part?
I mean, there's a host of people who are complicit. They're like, you know, they want you to remain how you are because they're profiting off of you or they get something. I mean, friends who, you know, get to live a lifestyle because you're living that lifestyle. And so there's a lot of letting go, a lot of goodbyes, a lot of...
It's almost like you have an entourage.
Oh, yeah. My one true rite of passage was to become the character of Vincent Chase. I mean, how perfect is life, right? My whole story is about looking to become a man, and then I become a man child, you know, and I basically represent for a whole era, you know, this character who is superficial, indulgent, ignorant, you know, basically the epitome of toxic masculinity embodied in a man. And because of that, I felt like the man. I felt like I'd become a man. Like I'm making the money and I'm getting the accolades. And every time I'd go out in public, people would lure me. They'd coax me into becoming more that in real life because they wanted to be hanging out with that guy. And so I would get immediate approval the more I behaved in that way.
I mean, you're talking about stuff that is, it's so powerful because I think all of us do get stuck in a role. Maybe you're the black sheep of the family and you're playing that thing out, or maybe you're like the breadwinner or whatever it is, or you're the good girl or you're the whatever, you're the responsible one. Like everybody winds up getting stuck in some kind of a role, and at some point that role doesn't serve you in the same way. And you realize when you start trying to make a change how many people need you to be stuck in that peg. No, you got to be that. And if you stop being that, this is not going to work. And so it takes a lot of courage, just like you said, to go through the goodbyes and that sort of stuff. I mean, what you're describing, a real epic journey, you know, from a victim to somebody who is playing out certain victimization yourself, to someone who wants to be a healer, from a boy child that didn't have the right male support to then emulating the wrong male support to now trying to be that male support for yourself and for others. I mean, this is a big kind of epic journey, kind of like the hero returned sort of a thing. And if you're just doing that by yourself and for yourself, that'd be a lot, but you're also trying to bring some species with you. You're trying to bring some change through, not just for yourself, but for the world. Let's talk a little bit now about the work that you did with the oceans, the stuff that you're doing now in the private sector. Let's just talk about how once you hit that reset button, you didn't just do the homesteading stuff. You are out there trying to make a change.
Yeah. I mean, I meant it before. Like I realized that, you know, growing up in sort of a liberal-minded culture, I mean, just as it is defined these days in New York, I really did have a lot of faith in our political system, and that we can actually make a change if we just vote, and we can make the world the way we want it, and through government and responsible corporate actions, you know, the world can be as we imagine it. So that was how I was operating and doing a lot of nonprofit work and raising awareness and campaigns. And if we could all just tweet, you know, enough, things will change. Things will be better. You know, I'm really thinking of things very differently these days. But, you know, there was a time when I was creating nonprofits and working with the UN, and I'm really proud of the work that we have done. We did eliminate 20 billion plastic straws from the waste stream, for example. I mean, there's too many freaking straws out in the world, too much plastic, but it was really symbolic. 20 billion is so minuscule relative to the amount of plastic that we consume and use and discard irresponsibly out in our natural ecosystem for stuff that doesn't biodegrade anytime soon. But, you know, to me, I was like, that's just not enough. We have an amazing organization called Next Wave Plastics, which is a consortium of 15 plus companies with international footprints who've all agreed to do an internal audit of their business and agreed to use OBP, which is ocean-bound plastic, and then buy it. So they've agreed to buy a certain amount of this so that we can actually jumpstart a supply chain of mismanaged plastic. So instead of going out into the ocean and collecting it and bringing it back after it's been corrupted by bacteria and heat and salt and water, when it becomes a lesser material that's harder to upcycle, we capture it before it goes there because it's mismanaged anyway, and we put it back in the economy.
How do you capture it? I mean, how do you keep it from getting out there in the first place?
I mean, it's mismanaged material in often developing countries where there's a need for jobs. So we incentivize waste pickers. We give them jobs to pick and sort through, and then we're creating a supply chain. So this stuff actually has value. You know, plastic is very inexpensive. When it's thrown out into the environment, it's just not worth the expense to pick it up. But these companies have agreed to buy it. So now there's incentive to go get it and you know, bring it together, and then they're going to use it. And so the idea is, if we can build enough demand, then we can actually start to bring down the cost of OBP, ocean-bound plastic, and start to prevent it from going into waterways and rivers and ultimately the ocean.
I think what's so amazing about what you're saying is that in some ways you weren't embodied when you were kind of doing your do-gooder thing with your not-for-profits in the UN and your slogans or whatever. You were outside of your body, you know, even politically. Now you're bringing forward a market-based solution, but you're bringing it forward from a much deeper place. It's not a symbolic thing around straws. It's a deep change around the whole system.
Well, it's B2B. It's not sexy. It's like, what? Like, how do you get people excited about, you know, supply chain?
It's amazing to see how, you know, how you do one thing is how you do everything. Before, you know, we did the Stop Sucking public campaign, and it's consumer facing, and we got all the celebrities in there, and it was fun, and it did make a big difference, but it was surface. And now you've gone deeper in your own self, and now your work has gone deeper, and B2B, I mean, business to business. But that's really where maybe you don't have the same amount of flash, but you may have a much bigger impact.
Yeah, look, I think my philosophy has definitely changed around politics too. I just don't know how much we can legislate or dictate what other people do. You know, I mean, you can only do that to a certain extent, but if people aren't doing it from their own ethics or their own sense of how they want to build the world or create the world, it feels too cumbersome to have laws and legislation trying to control everybody and their individual actions across 8 billion people. You know, so I really do believe we need people to change. You know, we need the transformation of the individual. And so that's really what I've leaned into now is like, okay, let me stop soapboxing and telling everyone else what to do. And let me start looking at myself. Like, and it's this whole part of the whole journey. It's like, I really need to change myself deeply and absolutely so that I don't have to think about the ethical choice. I can just be it. I'm just embodied, like you said.
And I think, you know, there's this whole thing of, trusting that real miraculous stuff is always nonlinear. I think it's always like this one little thing you didn't think mattered, and it winds up changing everything. And then something else you put all your work into is a total flop. But then later on, it turns out that flop taught you something you needed for this other thing. But I think life rewards in all circumstances, success and failure, is just trying to find your authentic self in the middle of all of it. The few times when I've been able to make a difference, it was when I went from my talking from my head, because I tried to be smart. Like, you know, all I had going for me as a kid was like, I was smart. Like, I was a little nerd. I was skinny and picked on and had glasses and couldn't play sports. And
we would have chilled. We would have chilled.
Yeah. You know, but I was really smart. You know, I could, and not in math, not in science, but in English, the humanities, I was really smart. So I just quadrupled down on that one thing. I just kind of like grew my brain like a balloon, just kind of like got my brain big enough to kind of float me out of rural West Tennessee and, you know, drop me down at Yale for law school. And so I tend to focus on my brain a lot, but my body, my heart, my soul was like, I'll spend 100 times more effort trying to get smart than trying to get fit, you know, or trying to get peaceful or trying to get anything. And what I've seen with myself is that whenever anything actually works or something actually moves in a positive direction, it's not coming from that. It's not coming from my head. It's coming from my heart. It's coming from a sense of connection. It's coming from some, you know, deeper sense of well-being or purpose or something else. And then all the external stuff I'm trying to make happen, it kind of happens with a lot more ease. Sometimes this stuff will just happen with ease when I'm coming from the right place. And I do think that individual change that you're talking about, it's got to be a bigger part of the conversation. I believe in laws and policies and politics and stuff like that too, but I believe in it a lot less than I used to.
Well, I have to say, Van, I've watched your journey and it's been miraculous. I mean, beautiful to watch, just especially now when things feel so fragmented and you're really bringing people together. It's incredible. I mean, there's this sort of outrage machine. The algorithms are like hopping us up on our cortisone and our endorphins, and we just have to be louder than the next and anti this and anti that. And everybody's trying to change everybody else and disparage them and ruin them and cancel them. And I see you coming together, and I mean, I'm imagining like Doc in Back to the Future, like holding the rods together, just like bringing people together, even if at your own peril, potentially. But it's really awesome to watch.
Well, I appreciate that. And, it's very hard to get famous, and it's very hard to give that up. It's very hard to break into that change maker elite. And it's also very hard to give that up, because you can always throw out a statistic or a photograph or a bill you passed or an award you got, but it's very hard to walk away from that and say, no, I want deeper change. I'm going to literally put myself in a position where nobody knows what I'm doing, because it's so deep in the supply chain that it's only going to make a difference to the, to the people who really understand that, all that stuff. And that's not the millions of people they used to appeal to. I know that you still have a public profile when it comes to Instagram, when it comes to YouTube. Tell me a little bit about Earth Speed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a how-to podcast docuseries on Instagram and YouTube. It's a lifestyle in the cadence of nature. It's a platform for all these things that we've been talking about. How do we learn to be more self-reliant and resilient? How do we learn to be living in harmony with nature, and also with the mentality of the timelessness and the perfection of the way nature actually designs the world? And if we can recognize that we are emergent beings, that we come from nature, that we are not separate from nature, and if we can start to behave in harmony with nature, not in dominion as like the controllers of, that can rape and exploit nature, but also to be mindful that even our solutions to climate change or the challenges of nature should be questioned. If we think we can somehow come in and it's well-intentioned, appreciate, all the environmentalists out there, but in many ways there's an arrogance to environmentalism that thinks it can somehow change the world, change the earth by just doing this, by just driving that, by just stopping this. I think we have another thing coming. So it's a lifestyle that starts to recognize our interconnectedness, not only to one another, but also to nature itself. And I believe that if we start to recognize that and live that, good things could happen.
Yeah, I'm a big part of the mainstream media, and I'm proud of it. My life would be so different had I not done the mainstream media stuff. But I do believe that we're in danger of convincing people, no matter what political perspective you have, that there are just so many awful people in the country on the other side of some line that you can't get anything done. My experience has been the opposite. My experience has been there are so many awesome people on both sides of the political divide, all races, all faiths. There's so many awesome people who just don't know what to do and who just don't know how to work together yet. So I just have rejected the assumption that most people are terrible.
I was a New York, LA guy. Bicoastal, right? And all the flyover states on my way over, I would just shake my head like, these Republicans, they're voting us into hell, totally ignorant, right? And meanwhile, I'm talking about the environment and, how farmers need to be this and farmers need to be that, and they need to do this or that for the environment. But I really, totally out of ignorance. I was totally, absolutely disconnected from nature. The cities. I was in concrete jungles, but I didn't have a connection to any of that. I did have a garden, which I paid someone else to make so that I could show everybody how to live the example. But I never actually, full disclosure, I was a fraud in many ways, because I felt that I had to represent the thing, but I didn't have to be the thing. And so that everyone else could do all the work.
Deep.
Right. And so, because of Trump, because when Trump was elected, I was so horrified. I didn't sleep, like tossing and turning for weeks. I was like, how could these people do that to us? How could they vote for this guy? And because of that, I made a decision to start to reach out and try and understand them. And in all honesty, to maybe try and change them. Maybe if I understood them enough, I could flip them, pull them back to the good side, the righteous. And the more I started to reach out and connect with them, the more I realized that they didn't need changing, that I needed to expand. Cut to here I am now living in those flyover states. I'm living in Texas. And the people who are fulfilling that father role for me, and I'm getting choked up, are the farmers. I'm literally getting choked up. They're like, they're my papa. And they are craving it. They are craving youngsters who want to pick up the baton and take from them all that they've learned and take over and start to learn how to take care of the land and how to farm and how to take care of animals. And it's not easy. And it takes a lot of learning and a lot of skill. So now my mentors and my father figures are cowboys, and I love them. And they make me feel seen and loved in ways I never got in the city. And how ironic.
Wow. That's amazing. This has been a very, very powerful experience for me. This one's just, you know, not as a host, just brother to brother, just talking. I just appreciate everything that you've shared. And I really believe that the Uncommon Ground audience is going to take tremendous heart from your courage. And I really appreciate you for being on Uncommon Ground.
We see the beauty of hope. That spirit is so beautiful.
Those who become American citizens love this country even more. And that's why the Statue of Liberty lifts her lamp to welcome them to the Golden Door.
For me, that was a really just extraordinary conversation. His level of just, you know, transparency and vulnerability is just rare. You know, especially I think for, you know, actors and stuff like that, there's the sense you got to be on, you got to deliver the interview. And he just was coming from a very different place. And, you know, I just hope that what people take away from him is, first of all, you never know what somebody else is going through, what pain is in somebody else's past. But also, you never know what you can overcome until you decide you're going to overcome it. And he is, I just think, authentically put himself in a position to overcome a lot of stuff that, you know, is very hard to overcome internally. And that is making it more possible for him to overcome things externally, whether you're talking about, you know, permaculture, whether you're talking about the oceans or plastic, you know, supply chain issues, you know. How you do one thing is how you do everything. And he's gone deeper into himself. He's gone deeper into the work to make the world better. And I think he's, you know, made this conversation a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be. So here's to a lot more depth, a lot more courage, and a lot more of us being a lot more like Adrien Grenier. This is Van Jones on Common Ground. Uncommon Ground with Van Jones is an Amazon original production. It's produced by Magic Labs Media and Wonder Media Network. Our producers are Teddy Alexander, Maisha Dyson, Grace Lynch, Taylor Williamson, Adesua Agbonile, and Lindsay Credible. Our managing producers are Laura D. and Eliza Mills. Our executive producers are Jenny Kaplan and Morgan Jones. Our theme music was composed by The Grand Mess. Publicity for the show is led by Alice Zoe, Andy Lichtenfeld, Didier Moraes, Chantel Muentes, and Sam Petherbridge. Special thanks to Jana Carter, Alex John Burns, Seven McDonald, Drew Schwindeman, Brianna Jones, Eric Carter, Trevor McNeil, Carrie McCarran, Joe McMillan, Steph Walkeen, Vanessa Redbert, Ty Jacobson, Marshall Louie, and Chris Jacobin.
Hey,
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Uncommon Ground with Van Jones ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you, like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.